This is The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167.
Hello and welcome to The Feed with Amber Mack.
And Michael B. for everything new now and next.
We have you covered what's happening in the world of tech and what's trending online.
On the show, what you need to know about Facebook's partnership with Ray-Ban.
Plus, we tell you why Twitter is letting some accounts register as good bots.
Also on the show, how robot vacuums face the challenge of, well, doggy doo-doo.
And we share how you can share a video from your Zoom call in real time.
That's all coming up right here on The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B.
This episode of The Feed is powered by TP-Link. TP-Link routers and technology can remove wireless pain points in your home so you have better performance for working, streaming, and gaming.
Trending up.
I have to share your secret, Amber. You've been getting excited about unboxing routers.
Oh, yes. We'll talk about that a little bit later on, but you're absolutely right. You know, it's funny. I was away the past week in Prince Edward Island, and while I was away, my husband Chris took all of our TP-Link routers, our mesh network, and basically like unplugged everything, redid it, put new routers in new rooms, set it all up, and you know, what a relief to have that when we were back, because you get a little sloppy over time with how you manage the infrastructure within a house in terms of the wireless network. So I would recommend if you have kids back at school, not a bad idea to start to think about that infrastructure you have in place for your wireless connection. Anyway, this has nothing to do with our headlines of the day.
But all that we have to say is Amber is plugged in and ready to go for the fall. All right, let's get right to it. Well, what are people talking about?
Okay, so first story, Facebook has released their Ray-Ban smart glasses. I was actually on a phone call with Facebook when they were doing their press event for this. So the idea is, smart glasses have been around for a while. And with this partnership, you would be able to wear the glasses and take calls, listen to music, capture videos and photos to post online. What could possibly go wrong, Michael?
I love that that's what you said, because I don't think anybody needs any more devices or any ability to be distracted as they are walking through life. I mean, honestly, I don't know. I understand efficiency. I understand productivity. I'm not convinced. And sure, I'd love to be proved wrong. Don't get me wrong. but I don't see I'm not rushing to use something like this or think that it's going to improve my day in any way of how I interact with technology or people.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. I mean, we want to always support innovation on this show. We're always advocates for new technologies. We never know where things are going to go with this new technology. However, there are times, and this is one of them, where I think this is not the tech that we need right now. And I think that's an important distinction, because we have so many problems, and Facebook is at the epicenter of many of those problems. Lots of good things that they do in the world. But right now, in this age of misinformation and disinformation and conspiracy theories, what I don't need is a pair of glasses connected to Facebook, potentially capturing content. So it's not to take away from the incredible innovation that's gone on behind this, but it is really important to have these conversations about where we put our time and efforts in terms of moving tech forward for the betterment of humanity.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good point, because obviously staying connected is one of their key messaging. And so they believe that they're introducing this to help people stay connected with the world, you know, and it's the same thing. I think that there are certain technologies that are exceptionally useful for certain things. I just don't know if we need to add yet another layer, especially when we're out and about. And that's the part that I get a bit concerned about. And I have been recently, I mean, I've been doing a lot of walking outside because and it's been nice and sunny. And what upsets me the most is a lot of people are back to head down on their phones, and this is walking around, or you see people at coffee shops, and they're, you know, with two or three people, and they're not talking to each other, and they're on their phones, and you And, you know, when you do eavesdrop a little bit and listen to conversations, people are talking about social media and they're talking about taking Instagram photos. And it's just, to me, that's the part that I have a struggle with. So as I said, I'm fully on board in everything you just said, Amber, you know, very much into innovation, very much love the idea of what, you know, the technology behind it. I just think there's other places that are more important to be focusing innovation and technology advancements at the moment.
Yes, I could not agree more. Okay, so let's spend the next couple
of
minutes.
It's a bit of a Debbie Downer here.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, there's a lot to talk about. So let's talk about Twitter for a second. This is really interesting. We know there are lots of bots on Twitter, and just like hacking, bots have a bad reputation. There can be good hackers in the world who do great stuff, often called friendly hackers, and there are good bots. There are bots that are maybe weather bots that are simply automated bots to warn you about any potential weather or severe weather in your neighborhood. Those can be good things. Now, Twitter has announced a new feature that will allow those good bots to identify themselves as good bots on their profile. So you can see that it is an automated thread. I think this is cool. I mean, some people may not realize that they're following a bot and they may try to engage and think, why isn't the bot answering me?
This happened to me. So I was like, oh my God, this account is so smart. And they called me by my name and they were like, and I thought I was very special. Just so you know, 100%. It was a bot and a good bot, but it was for the new 007 movie. And I was like, oh my God, these guys are genius. Market is because they then addressed it to me and they tweeted it at me. And I was like, oh, so I think this is helpful. So I don't get tricked. I was like, it definitely was a bot. So I think it can definitely be a positive, especially as you said, there's lots of bad bots, but there's also good bots. So it's good to know at least the good bots are doing the right thing and identifying who they are. So you don't think that you're getting special treatment from marketing of a film like I did.
Absolutely. Okay. We don't have too much time left, but we're going to talk about
the doggy doo-doo.
Poopocalypse. I've never heard that term before, but it's on the front of CNET, so we had to say it. And it's all about the iRobot Roomba. And this is really interesting. Well, first of all, any dog that poops in the house, I mean, that's a nightmare scenario. But it appears that this robot vacuum will be able, I think, from what I can tell, just be able to stay away from it. I don't know if it has smell-o-vision or what.
Well, I think this is the problem because obviously if you leave the house and your dog does something, the last thing you want to do is come back and a Roomba vacuum cleaner has moved that poop all over the place. So if it's able to identify that, obviously a person needs to come and clean that up properly. So I think that the technology here has done marvelous work on being able to identify and steer clear of it, which I think is a godsend to most people with pets.
Yes, absolutely. And what's really interesting is that, you know, I do some work with iRobot, so I'm very clear on how these robot vacuums work. I mean, they do have a camera inside. And I will say, we shouldn't underestimate the incredible innovation, speaking of innovation, that goes into some of these robot vacuums. It's just amazing. So here's one great example of that. And I'm sure that would make a lot of people happy who have pets who maybe don't get a chance to go outside.
I think this is genius. And as you said, fantastic innovation from Roomba for sure. So of course, stay with us. We've got a whole lot more on the show. When we return, how to get more girls interested in STEM, thanks to Ara, the innovator.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. In the Spotlight.
Well, according to a 2019 report from management consulting firm McKinsey & Company, only 35% of STEM students in higher education worldwide are actually women, where they study natural sciences more than applied sciences. To encourage young girls to participate in science, technology, engineering, and math, Google Engineering Program Manager Kamal Singh wrote the children's book Ara the Star Engineer, and has just released a sequel to that book. And the new book is actually called Ara the Dream Innovator. We're very pleased to be able to spend some time with her to learn all about the characters and the, you know, the story behind the story, to be fair. Thank you so much for joining us. And I think that would be a really great place to start. What gave you the idea to create these characters?
Well, firstly, thank you for having me here. I'm stoked to be with Amber and you, Michael. So what gave me the idea to create the characters is really something that my daughter had said to me, and she was 4 at that time. And she said very nonchalantly, "Oh, Mama, all engineers are boys, isn't it?" And that had me really bummed. I'm a software engineer myself by background, and I work with some phenomenal, amazing women engineers at Google. And I wanted to showcase children a world where, you know, technology is nothing to be feared, but it's something that is whimsical and magical and exciting, and a world where they see themselves represented in the field of technology and in books. So, you know, the catchphrase in my head when I think about books and why I do this is really that, you know, childhood is magical and technology is whimsical and representation is monumental. So I wanted kids to have this set of books where they read stories about things like startups and innovation and scientific curiosity. And along the way, they meet fun characters that are based on real life women superheroes who are from, you know, engineering and who are founders or who are scientists. So that was my hope and wish for this set of books.
Love that you focus on the magic of technology, because I think we've really lost that in our society. We're so often inundated with headlines of doomsday scenarios. And also, I think if you look to role models that we have in the technology space, all of the biggest names that people really know are men. And that's just a reality of where we're at today. Are you feeling optimistic about some of the shifts that are happening? And obviously, you're playing a positive role in this transition.
So Amber, that's a great point. So, you know, I feel that inspiration is a prerequisite to learning. So if we're trying to target children from a very young age to be interested in things like STEM, we have to inspire them to be interested in STEM. And it's not about just making them sit in front of a computer and having them do coding classes. I think it's more than that. It's showcasing them role models who've done amazing things in technology, and these people who look like them so that they can see themselves as those role models in the future. So yes, you're right. We do hear about men typically when we hear about CEOs or tech leaders. And that's where, you know, I want to kind of bust that stereotype. And I want to show kids people who have invented voiceover IP, for example. And that's a woman, someone who was responsible for the, you know, cybersecurity of Chrome is a woman. And there are women unicorn founders that we do not hear about. But they do exist, and we need to talk about them, and we need to showcase them to not just girls, but even boys. So showcase these people from underrepresented backgrounds who are doing amazing things to children.
Well, let's get down to the serious things. Ara, how do we balance her adventures with learning? Because learning's not always that fun. So what kind of storylines can the kids expect to find in these books?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, in the first book, which is Ara the Star Engineer, Ara's on a quest to write an algorithm to count all the stars in the sky. And really, what I would love for kids to take away is not how to code in Python or how to code in Java, but I would like them to take away the whole process of computational thinking. How do you take a big problem and break it down into smaller problems? What are algorithms? Are algorithms something that are to be feared, or are they something that are just like logical problem-solving steps? You know, you could have an algorithm to bake a cake. So what I want them to take away is logical thinking. And you know, we talk in the books about this stellar algorithm for success, which is comprised of courage, creativity, coding, and collaboration. So I want children to know that, you know, if you want to be leaders, it's more than just coding, right? You have to know how to collaborate with people. You have to come up with creative ideas. And you have to have the courage to take those ideas and pitch to the world to make your dreams come true. And then in the second book, which is Ara the Dream Innovator, Ara has an idea. She wants to found a startup and she wants to build a dream decoder, but she wants to make sure it's inclusive. So the theme is about inclusive innovation. So yes, it's important to, you know, let's say, innovate things. But what is the problem that you're trying to solve that will help the world? So don't just think about building a product or a company. Think about, you know, a real life problem that you're solving that will help people. So those are the kind of things I want children to take away. And you know, I've heard stories where people have written in, and children have written in to me, and they've written an algorithm to feed their cat or an algorithm to get ready to go to the school. And I think that's great.
I think there's, that's a little sneaky because they don't want to do their chores by feeding the pet.
That is true, but I'll take it.
So let's talk about challenges. And a challenge that exists today is getting kids to get in front of literature like this that you've put out there. So talk to us a little bit about how you hope that this story gets in front of as many children as possible.
My utmost hope and desire would be to get this into the hands of as many children as possible, which is why the story is a combination of whimsy and technicality. So it's not an academic story about how to code, but it's a story about how, you know, technology is fun and you can use it to do meaningful things, but in a very fun manner. So I hope that the, you know, whimsical angle is something that children will relate with better. And of course, they'll see characters like themselves who are in the book, so they will relate with that better. And then I think one amazing thing is that the books have been translated or published in more than 10 languages globally, and that has increased the outreach of the book. So I hope that continues, like the publication to many other languages continues beyond the 10 or the 12 that we have right now. And we've had teachers who are, you know, kind of more focused on STEM programs show a lot of interest in the book. And to kind of accommodate teachers in schools, we've actually introduced lesson plans, which are on the book website. And then they go along with the story of the book, but they also sort of tie in with a classroom setting. So I think that's a good hook to get the children interested and intrigued and plugged in.
Well, listen, we want to encourage everybody to check out the book. All you have to do is head on over to adventuresofara.com to learn all about these incredible stories that will inspire the next generation to pursue careers in STEM. Thank you so much for joining us. Most importantly, thank you for telling these stories and just getting the next generation ready for what we hope is a really bright future.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure speaking with you all. Thank you.
Up next, how to record Zoom conversations in real time with an app.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, SiriusXM 167. Apptastic.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. It's time now to take a look at some new and trending apps. Michael, you have done it again. Some good picks on here. And also a bit of a reflection of where we're at today in terms of continuing to work remotely and do so many things remotely. The first one is a fun one. At least the name is fun. It's called Popcorn, and it's all about bite-sized video messaging.
Yeah, it was really funny because when I saw the name, I was all excited about some kind of movie related app because popcorn and, you know, how my mind works. And it wasn't that. And it actually turned out to be a very useful app. So basically, it's designed to work chats more efficiently and make it more personable with bite-sized video messages. And so what they're referring to them as pops. So the little short bite-sized video messages are referred to as pops. So I thought that was kind of cute. So basically you record a pop and drop the URL link in an email, text, or Slack message or project ticket. So it's still kind of adding that quick, you know, in person, if you will, little video messages. Obviously, it's a lot clearer, I find, sometimes when you are able to record rather than write out things in an email, because obviously there's certain nuances in context when it comes to actually physically saying a word as opposed to typing it.
Yeah, it's a fun one. And, you know, it's interesting. One of the tech blogs that we both follow really closely is TechCrunch. And they did a great little review about how this is bringing, this app is bringing short form video to the workplace. And it appears very sort of, like you said, kind of casual as well, you know, in the sense that there's a lot of formality to hour long Zoom calls. So I love that they're focusing on these really short 60 second or less videos. It's very Snapchat like. I think that's one of the things they really emphasize.
Except it doesn't disappear. So
yeah, that's a good thing to remember.
Yeah, especially when it comes to a work. And when it comes to a work environment, you know, if you're like, oh, what did they say, or what was their direction, or how did they say that? I can't remember. And it is interesting because I'm getting more and more familiar and used to. I have a very close friend who just records audio messages on WhatsApp and sends it to me, and sometimes they're a minute long, 2 minutes long, and it actually is starting to get a lot more easier than I'll just record something as if we are having a conversation and then send it back, and then they might respond a day or two later. So I see the evolution of this and how this could be useful using video for sure, and especially in a work environment, and just those quick bite-sized messages. And then I feel like I have interacted with a colleague, but I didn't have to sit, as you mentioned, you know, like a formal 15-minute or 30-minute Zoom call and have things dragged out. So a really good one to check out. Plus, the name is just really, really cool. The next one we wanted to have a look at is, you know, it's also pretty useful as well. This one is allowing you to actually record, clip, and share video from Zoom. So, of course, you know, everybody has been on Zoom for many, many months now. So this actually helps you be able to do this in real time. So the app is called the Grain app. And so, again, especially when it comes to a work environment, when you're having these meetings, sometimes I think there could be some very useful information. You don't want to have to go back to the person. If you were able to clip it and save it somewhere, I think that that would be really handy, and making it so seamless as well.
Yeah, this is really interesting. I'm very curious about this because it appears that what they're trying to do is allow you basically to, like you said, to pull these clips from your Zoom calls. The fascinating thing to me is that they're actually being used by a number of well-known companies at Vimeo, at Alasan, at ClickUp, and a few other companies as well. So it's fascinating to me where they basically just let you, you know, grab a quick little clip and just help you remember it. Because there are tools out there, Michael, like Otter.ai, that does this in terms of voice transcriptions on Zoom. But what's neat here is that they focus on the video component. So another reminder to people when you're having these calls, be careful what you say, because there's lots of tools that are focusing on turning these conversations into pieces of the day's kind of workflow. And this is just one example of that.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, this is really useful because obviously gone are the days where 20 people would sit around a boardroom table and somebody would take notes, and it can be quite cumbersome. Mm-hmm. And then you have to remember, did somebody record the notes correctly and who was assigned what? I see a lot of value in a tool like this. So you can imagine, you know, if you and I were having a production meeting and, you know, someone had assigned one of us something to add into the show, and if we'd be able to clip that and I could just send it to you, it'd be so much easier. And then I can just go to that phone like, oh yeah, that's right. Here are my three things. I didn't have to write it down. I'm not wasting paper. I don't have to bug you by sending an email or triple checking. I just go and, oh yeah, here is exactly what I was given to do. And it was a quick clip and cut.
Yeah. And they also say on their website, and I could see how this could be useful, that you can create a little video summary. So you can take a bunch of clips from a meeting and create a video summary and send it to someone. I think that actually is probably one of the most useful.
Oh, meeting highlight. Yeah. Like if you miss the meeting, here's a quick 60-second overview. That's brilliant.
Yeah.
You know what? Whoever found this app, genius.
Well, also, you know, it's fun too for us because we are recording, just so people are familiar with this, we are recording with Aaron and we're using Zoom right now. But Michael, you know, if we were to go on camera and you could just clip stuff real time to throw it out on social media, right?
We might do it one day using this. The challenge is accepted. I hear you.
I want to try it because here's the thing. The thing I don't quite understand is that they say you can do it in real time, and full disclosure, I haven't actually tested it out, but we will. So if you're recording in real time and you're looking for those little tidbits of what someone says that is super provocative or interesting, they would have already said it. So do they record the whole thing and then you go back and clip? So we have to figure some of that stuff out. But again, it's called grain.co, and maybe we can make a commitment to trying this out on our next Zoom call for the feed.
I guess I won't be doing the show in my pajamas anymore. Now, let's move on to health in our mouth.
Yeah, this is a good one. So, you know, I was reading from someone, and we don't have too much time left for this one, but a lot of people have avoided going to the dentist because you do, of course, have to take your mask off. And if you're worried about COVID, that may feel uncomfortable despite the efforts that these places have made to make you feel safe. So this is an app called Addent. And basically you take pictures of your mouth and it uses AI to scan those photos and tell you if you have any issues, and then it can then be shared with your dentist. So this is really fun. I can see some great uses for this, particularly with kids who maybe are fearful of the dentist, my son, being able to just do like a quick little scan. It's not a replacement for visits, but I do think this would be helpful.
Yeah. And of course, all your data is protected. I know that is a big red flag with people when it comes to anything to do with their health. So obviously that's all built in as well. So of course, if you've got any apps you think we should know about and check out and share with people, you can of course let us know. The three apps that we just covered. So we've got our popcorn app, we've got Grain, and then we've got our Addent dental health app as well. So of course, tweet us at Amber Mac and at MBancroft80 and use the hashtag The Feed. Coming up, how MapleSoft wants to help Canadian kids love math.
The Feed with Amber Mac and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Techstar.
You're listening to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. As kids head back to the classroom, technology is playing an even more important role in their education. MapleSoft is a mathematics-based education company that over the last year has released free AI tools to help students with self-directed learning. Joining us to talk more about this is Karishma Poonwani, who's the Director of Academic Products at MapleSoft. Hello there. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, first of all, this is the best Canadian name of all time. And I know you guys pick up on that with the Maple Learn and the Maple Calculator app. So for people who aren't familiar with MapleSoft, let's really start there. What are some of the tools that you offer, and what age groups do those target?
Great question. So as you mentioned, we're a Canadian-based company, and we provide math software and services for educators, engineers, and researchers. But specifically for kind of academics, MapleSoft has over 30 years experience working with educators to bring math software to the classroom. So we have learning tools like the free Maple Calculator app, Maple Learn, and our flagship product, Maple. And really, these products are meant to help students, parents, and educators teach and solve math problems at all levels. So high school up until university and beyond. And our goal is to help people develop an intuition and possibly even a passion for mathematics.
So how specifically would one of your tools help somebody in the classroom? Can you give us a practical example, say, with the Maple Calculator app? How does it work specifically, and how does it improve the education process for a student?
Yeah, so the Maple Calculator, it's kind of a supercharged version of your typical calculator. So it is powered kind of through AI technology. So you can, let's say, take a picture of a math problem, and it'll give you the result. It'll generate 2D and 3D graphs of the result, and it'll even provide you with step-by-step solutions. And because the calculator is driven by MapleSoft's really powerful math engine, It can solve all types of problems, from simple calculations all the way up to university math problems. And not only that, it's tied to our other product, Maple Learn. So let's say I'm a student and I, was working through a problem on paper, step by step. I checked the back of the book and I got the wrong answer. I'm trying to figure out, where did I go wrong? Maybe I look at the solution, the step-by-step solutions in the Maple calculator, but I'm still having some issues. I can take a picture of my entire worked out, handwritten solution, all of the steps, bring it into Maple Learn. And then I have even more resources at my disposal to kind of uncover mistakes. And then if I'm really stuck, just share that piece of paper, that digitized piece of paper, with my tutor or my other peers or even my teacher.
It's really interesting because I have a very good friend who said that one of the things that her child struggled with the most in terms of virtual learning, and my son had the same experience, was math. Because so often math needs to be a collaborative effort, in the sense that you may need a tutor if you're stuck. It's hard to really get answers to that specific problem. So can you talk a little bit about the timing of MapleSoft as a company in terms of why now is the right time for tools like this to exist in the marketplace, knowing that young people are learning in so many different ways?
Yeah. I'll be honest, when we kind of conceptualize, so Maple, which is our flagship product, has been used in academic institutions across the globe for 30 plus years, right? Our bread and butter comes from kind of academic learning and MapleSoft being university. And for the longest time, we worked with educators who said, you know what, we love Maple, but it's so powerful that it's overwhelming for our students. And so then we started talking about, well, how can we create an online version of Maple, but that's specifically geared to teaching and learning math, kind of starting at high school all the way up to first and second year university? How can we make the experience less intimidating, but also as powerful? And so that's when we started conceptualizing the idea of Maple Learn, thinking that it would be a powerful tool for remote learning. And then suddenly the pandemic hit and it just exploded in terms of interest and use. And we're glad that we were able to offer a product kind of when people needed it the most.
What about challenges? I can imagine that learning in general can be challenging for a lot of students and or teachers when you go to build out a course and then try and teach it in the classroom. What would you say to those people that, in fairness, can still be a little bit apprehensive about using technology and not really understanding how useful it can be? How do you get across the benefits that outweigh, compared to that in person, that physical? I remember the days, and this now makes me sound super old, and Amber's going to laugh. But when you had to sit there with paper and pencil and then, go through a math problem from beginning to end?
Yeah, that is a great question. So one of the things we've tried to do with the Maple Calculator and Maple Learn is really make it as easy as possible for, students and teachers and even parents to actually adopt and start using the product. So as I mentioned before with the calculator, a student can continue to work on a problem with a piece of paper and pencil. But if they get stuck, they can take a picture and now they can have resources at their disposal through the calculator or send it straight to Maple Learn. And, they don't have to start working or knowing syntax or commands to get started. So that's one thing we've done. We've created hundreds and hundreds of examples in for Maple Learn to show students and educators how to use the product. And so it can be the starting point of creating their own resources and materials. And I think it's just, building confidence, showing people that they can share the document, showing them how easy it is. It's something we're working on. We actually have educators who are content creators who are helping us develop content. So if a teacher comes and says, hey, I'm interested in, using the product, I want to use it for teaching this particular concept, can you help me? We can develop content specifically for that teacher.
Well, I think this is just an incredible resource, especially as you mentioned, for those students who are learning more complicated math and do need that help. I love that you're working with content creators, and it just seems to make sense for so many people in terms of being able to have some type of aid. And it also appears that the timing for all of you is quite good in this world where we don't know who's going to be learning in person versus online. So lots of great things on the go. Just wanted to thank you so much for joining us and encourage people to check out your company and what you do over at maplesoft.com, a place where people can learn more about MapleLearn. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you so much.
Up next, what one entrepreneur is doing to reduce food waste at home.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. In the spotlight.
Welcome back to The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. Between 33 to 50% of all food produced globally is never eaten. And the value of this wasted food is worth more than $1 trillion. Now, Olio is deeply committed to reducing food waste in the home and helping people to consume more locally and sustainable food. To share more about how this company works, we are joined now by Sasha Celestial One, who is the co-founder and COO of the company. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the app, Olio, and how exactly this works to help to put a dent in the amount of food that's wasted.
So the app is really, really easy to use. It makes it, it's simple, easy, fast, and fun to share food. You just take a picture of whatever it is that you don't want to eat. It could be something that you maybe you overcooked or you overbaked, or you had a party and you've got some leftovers. You just take a picture, add a brief description, click submit, and then it will alert your neighbors nearby based on how they've set their preferences that food is available and they request it. They pop around, they pick it up. And that is an action, that neighbor to neighbor food sharing, that is happening nearly a million times a month on the app.
So I just want to focus in on that specific feature. So for those that are listening, is what we're talking about is we're actually, you know, building and helping a community. And it's almost like it's taking the shame out of helping and supporting one another at the same time. How did you come up with it? Because this is a very different concept to simply building an algorithm and working out, you know, how much I should or shouldn't be buying and to reduce waste of just going to, you know, the grocery store. This is a very different concept.
Well, my best friend and co-founder 6 years ago experienced a problem on moving day. She had some non-perishable food that she wanted to pack, and the removal men said, absolutely not, you can't pack your food. And she went out in the middle of the street in the middle of winter and tried to give the food away. She was in Switzerland at the time, didn't speak the language, et cetera. And she failed. And in frustration, she smuggled the food into her boxes anyway, probably committing some type of international crime. But she was moving back to the UK. And when she told me that story, we just thought, this is the stupidest problem. Obviously, there's someone nearby who would have loved to have that food. This is just a communications issue that could easily be overcome with mobile technology. And that was really the genesis for Olio. But actually, food sharing is something that humans have been doing since the beginning of time. And it's part of how our species has thrived. So I think we're just modernizing something that is part, you know, sort of an ingrained behavior for all of us.
Is it a trust issue? That it is harder to, in this day and age too, to just simply go out on the street. And I mean, because in fairness, I have done this, and if I'm staying somewhere, I don't want to waste food, and I'm sure somebody's out there. So is it also trying to rebuild trust within a community so people are willing, you know, you don't necessarily have to be a homeless person to be given food. There are other people that would also benefit from it.
Oh, goodness. And the scale of food waste is so big. We need everyone to think about getting access to food that would otherwise go to waste and making good use of it. So we're not a charity. It's not about the haves giving to the have-nots. It's just about sort of conscious everyday consumers making sure that perfectly good food doesn't go to waste. But coming back to the trust issue, for some people it is. For many, you know, people exist on that spectrum, and there are a lot of different I guess some people are very cautious and others are much more trusting. But of course, we have all the regular sort of tools you would expect within an app to make it easier. So we've got ratings and user profiles, and you can sort of report any listing that you don't think is appropriate. And that really does help to build trust.
Well, and I think we've seen over the years that technology can help to rebuild trust and build trust, you know, whether it's on Airbnb where you have reviews and recommendations. I mean, we can kind of close the gap a little bit there. One question I had for you is that based on what I'm seeing in the app as far as how it works, as far as being something that would be done within a neighborhood, can you talk a little bit about the benefits beyond just the food sharing? Because I imagine this also brings people together in quite a unique way.
Yeah. So we have grown through our grassroots volunteer program. We have 77,000 people out all around the world sort of spreading the news about Olio. And for a lot of those people, they say that having that volunteering experience has really sort of given them a sense of purpose or gotten them out of the house after feeling very isolated and helped them to build relationships. You know, we're not just experiencing a sort of environmental challenge, just to put that lightly, but we're also experiencing a mental health crisis. You know, loneliness and anxiety globally are at all-time high rates. So by connecting people in real life over something that everyone needs every day, such as food, we are helping to build relationships and strengthen sort of community ties. And food is what we talk about a lot, and it's very emotional, and it's one of the biggest contributors to the climate crisis. But actually, the app is used all the time, every day, for non-food household items, whether that's books or toys or T-shirts or just anything that still has value and shouldn't get thrown in the trash bin.
So I know this is a big question, but do you see a day where we become a zero waste people?
Well, that would be amazing, but I think it's probably unrealistic. I think what is more realistic is to start to build in for, you know, right now we're in a very sort of linear consumption model based society in the Western world. We buy things, we use it for a very short period of time, and we often end up throwing it away. And actually, there could be a second, third, or fourth life for that product. And so what needs to happen is it needs to become just sort of second nature, where we think about extending the life of our products and also not always going to buy something first, whether it's at Walmart or it's on Amazon, thinking first, actually, where could I get it refurbished? Actually, could I borrow it from a neighbor, right? A borrow function is something that we're launching next month, which we're so excited about. There's so many things that clutter our homes. The average American home actually has 300,000 items in it, right? There's so many things that clutter our homes, and many of them we don't need to use on a regular basis. Everyone on the street does not need a bread baker, a bread machine. They very rarely get used. So why don't we have one for the whole street and we can borrow it? So I think what we're trying to do is move away from the food waste app. We're in the middle of sort of pivoting to the app that connects you with your neighbors to live a more sustainable, planet-friendly life. And we're doing that through layering on lots and lots of different ways that you can think about consumption at the local level.
Well, listen, it is amazing and excited to see the rollout as well as the pivot. It's definitely a topic that is so important. Again, if people want to check out the app and the company, it's called Olio. And thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Coming up, we tell you why robots are patrolling Singapore streets.
The Feed with Amber Mack and Michael B. For everything new, now and next on Canada Talks, Sirius XM 167. Socially Speaking.
It's time now for Socially Speaking, but before we get to our topic, which is all about robots patrolling the streets in Singapore, just a reminder that this episode of The Feed is powered by TP-Link. TP-Link routers and technology can remove wireless pain points in your home so you have better performance for working, streaming, and gaming. And speaking of gaming, the TP-Link Archer GX90 AX6600 gaming router will give the gamers in your home greater capacity and low latency. Plus, the Archer GX90 is equipped with Wi-Fi 6, so they can game in the fast lane without disrupting other online activities like working or streaming in the home. For gamers, that means no more lagging in the middle of a crucial shot, so their network speeds are as fast as their reaction needs. The Archer GX90 is easy to set up in minutes with the Tether app, and for more information, visit TP-Link online. I also want to say that we have this router in our house, and the unboxing experience is something that will wow any preteen or teenager. That's
such
all I'm going to say.
Such look a nerd.
It's super cool. Like
Amber needs to get out more people. She's taking invitations for coffee dates outside and that are when
That's
you're
true.
Masked.
I am. Okay. So, Aaron, hopefully you'll join us in this conversation. We talk a lot about robots on the feed. I thought this was interesting. And, you know, Singapore is always kind of ahead of the curve when it comes to implementing.
Ahead of the curve technology. Or ahead of the curb?
It's
a little joke between Amber and I.
Yeah, exactly. But I will say that this is particularly interesting. So they basically are doing a pilot project with a couple of robots. This isn't the first time they've done this. They've done this with Spot the robot dog as well. And that was for social distancing in parks. But now what they're doing is they have a pair of robots. I don't know why the robots have the same name, Xavier, but I guess Spot the robot dog does as well. And they are equipped with 360 cameras and sensors that allow them to navigate in public to see if there are any potential safety violations. And safety violations in Singapore are different than other places in the world. So that could mean something as simple as, you know, not parking your bike correctly, or maybe you're smoking in a place you should not be smoking. Now, Aaron, maybe because Michael has talked a lot on the show, maybe I'll come to you on this one. What would you do if you saw Xavier come up when you were parking your bike and tell you your bike is parked incorrectly?
Sorry, can you just say again, what happens when Xavier comes up to him and says what?
Your bike is parked incorrectly.
At first, I would probably maybe launch a stream of expletives at the robot. But then considering if I was a tourist in Singapore being approached by this robot who was representing the Singaporean police, I would probably comply. Like you said, off the top, Singapore has different rules.
Sorry, but I just ask, would you give the expletives if it was a person and then comply? Or it's only the expletives
you
come
you
out with the robot?
It's Aaron's
well,
turn.
I just want to be clear, because this is a very important point. Would you do the expletives if it was a person first? You'd only do the expletives if it was a robot first.
I would never do the expletives to the face of a person or law enforcement officer or someone ticketing me. I've had speeding tickets or parking tickets where I've been a minute too late and the person's putting the ticket on the dash here in Canada. I have not launched into expletives at the person. I've been exasperated. But no, I don't launch into expletives at people's faces. I try not to in my daily life. But yeah, like you said off the top, I mean, Singapore has different rules for a lot of social interactions in Canada or the US or the UK might. So if you're there, you got to be aware of their rules and be aware that the robot might be enforcing the rules. Yeah, I'd probably be, it's a mixture of wonder and novelty and frustration and exasperation all at once. But again, when you're in another country, you got to play by their rules.
Well, so my point of harping on that is exactly that. And I think that we will find that people won't take it as seriously and will think that it's okay to say certain things to a robot instead because it's not a person. And I think that's where there's going to be a problem, because in fairness, yes, this robot is exactly what you just said. It is a tool used by law enforcement, and it can and should be recording anything and everything, which then could lead to other altercations. And so I think that this is going to be the biggest struggle with adopting technology like this into our everyday lives. People will not think, just like they don't on social media, that they can say and do whatever they want and post. Same thing with robots that are enforcing laws. They could say and do whatever they want to the robot because it's not a real person. So I think there's going to be a lot of problems actually for people not taking it seriously, not understanding the severity and what the actual robot is there to do.
So I think Aaron touched on it, but just because my husband grew up in Singapore, It is a very law-abiding society because there are serious consequences at times in terms of not following the laws. So I'm curious about that as well, as far as how people respond. I mean, it may be a situation where, unlike here, where we're a little more defiant in the face of authority, that they do listen to the robot, or they're comfortable with the robot. Because if you remember, it was in 2020 that the NYPD, the police department in New York City, they introduced, I believe it was Spot the Robot Dog, and it was part of their surveillance team. They were doing a pilot project, but the whole community was in an uproar, and they had to cancel the pilot project because people just hated the idea of robots, you know, because let's face it, in America, they like it on the big screen. They don't like it on their streets.
Well, and it's also interesting that you bring that up too, because in North America, people are far more willing to share their views with officers of the law in real time when they're getting a ticket. And I don't know. I think that, again, you guys both touched on this. It is a cultural thing. I think there's, I don't know if I want to go this far, but, you know, there is or seems to be a lack of respect, actually. Asian cultures seem to understand authority, its place, and follow rules. And North Americans are a little bit more vocal. It's a tough one because, you know, you're in this balance of moving forward and helping to make efficiencies in keeping law and order and things a certain way. So, you know, this makes sense for simple things like making sure people aren't in the wrong place when it comes to smoking or parking a bike somewhere, or in COVID, for example, socially distancing properly, or in the groups that have been designated. You're not allowed to be in a group more than five people or something. So it's a tough one. But I don't think people in general, I don't have a lot of faith in people being respectful enough and following, whatever a robot says. I don't think they're going to take it as seriously, no matter where you are in the world eventually, compared to, well, at least in the short term, compared to a person.
Okay, well, we have to wrap up, but I will say if this robot runs into Aaron, Aaron's going to take his phone out and Instagram the robot, and Michael's going to run the other way.
I'm going to be like, "What? Don't let it get me. Don't let it catch me."
All right, let us know what you think about robots patrolling our streets. You can find us online at Amber Mac and at MBancroft80, and of course, use the hashtag TheFeed.
This is The Feed with Amber Mac and Michael B on SiriusXM Canada Talks, Channel 167.